A weariness swept over me that was not just due to the fact that I had been snatched from sleep. I got to my feet with the slow, stiff movements of an old man, and was about to turn away when I noticed something about the little animal. She was on her chest again, head extended, mouth open, tongue longing as she panted. There was something there I had seen before somewhere, that posture, and the exhaustion, pain and shock. It slid almost imperceptibly into my sleepy brain that she looked exactly like Mr. Kitson's ewe in that dark corner. A different species, yes, but all the other things were there. Mrs. Faxton, I said, I want to put Penny to sleep, not the way you think, but to anaesthetize her. Maybe if she has a rest from this non-stop drinking and vomiting and straining, it will give nature a chance. The young couple looked at me doubtfully for a few moments. Then it was the husband who spoke. Don't you think she's been through enough, Miss Harriet? She has, yes, she has. I ran a hand through my rumpled, uncombed hair. But this won't cause her any more distress. She won't know a thing about it. When they still hesitated, I went on. I would very much like to try it. It's just an idea I've got. They looked at each other. Then Mrs. Flaxton nodded. All right, go ahead. But this will be the last, won't it? Out into the night air to my car for the same bottle of Nembutal, and a very small dose for the little creature. I went back to my bed with the same feeling that I'd had about the ewe. Come what may, there would be no more suffering. Next morning, Penny was still stretched peacefully on her side, and when about 4 o'clock in the afternoon she showed signs of awakening, I repeated the injection. Like the ewe, she slept for 48 hours, and when she finally did stagger to her feet, she did not head immediately for her water bowl as she had done for so many days. Instead, she made her feeble way outside and had a walk round the garden. From then on, recovery, as they say in the case histories, was uneventful, or as I would rather write it, she wonderfully and miraculously just got better, and never ailed another thing throughout her long life. Helen and I used to play tennis on the grass courts near the Dalaby cricket ground. So did the Flaxtons, and they always brought Penny along with them. I used to look through the wire at her romping with the other dogs, and later with the Flaxtons' fast-growing young son, and I marvelled. I do not wish to give the impression that I advocate wholesale anaesthesia for all animal ailments, but I do know that sedation has a definite place. Nowadays, we have a sophisticated range of sedatives and tranquilizers to choose from, and when I come up against an acute case of gastroenteritis in dogs, I use one of them as an adjunct to the normal treatment, because it puts a break on the deadly, exhausting cycle, and blots out the pain and fear which go with it. And over the years, whenever I saw Penny running around, barking, bright-eyed, full of the devil, I felt a renewed welling of thankfulness for the cure, which I discovered in a dark corner of a stable, by accident.
Chapter 32.
This was the real Yorkshire, with the clean limestone wall riding the hill's edge, and the path cutting brilliant green through the crowding heather. And, walking face on to the scented breeze, I felt the old tingle of wonder at being alone on the wide moorland, where nothing stirred, and the spreading miles of purple blossom and green turf reached away till it met the hazy blue of the sky. But I wasn't really alone. There was Sam, and he made all the difference. Helen had brought a lot of things into my life, and Sam was one of the most precious. He was a beagle, and her own personal pet. He would be about 2 years old when I first saw him, and I had no way of knowing that he was to be my faithful companion, my car dog, my friend who sat by my side through the lonely hours of driving till his life ended at the age of 14. He was the first of a series of cherished dogs whose comradeship had warmed and lightened my working life. Sam adopted me on sight. It was as though he had read the Faithful Hound manual, because he was always near me, paws on the dash as he gazed eagerly through the windscreen on my rounds, head resting on my foot in our bed sitting room, trotting just behind me wherever I moved. If I had a beer in a pub, he would be under my chair, and even when I was having a haircut, you only had to lift the white sheet to see Sam crouching beneath my legs. The only place I didn't dare take him was to the cinema, and on these occasions he crawled under the bed and sulked. Most dogs love car riding, but to Sam it was a passion which never waned, even in the night hours. He would gladly leave his basket when the world was asleep, stretch a couple of times and follow me out into the cold. He would be onto the seat before I got the car door fully open, and this action became so much a part of my life that for a long time after his death I still held the door open unthinkingly, waiting for him. And I still remember the pain I felt when he did not bound inside. And having him with me added so much to the intermissions I granted myself on my daily rounds. Whereas in offices and factories they had tea breaks, I just stopped the car and stepped out into the splendour which was always at hand, and walked for a spell down hidden lanes, through woods, or as today along one of the grassy tracks which ran over the high tops. This thing which I had always done had a new meaning now. Anybody who has ever walked a dog knows the abiding satisfaction which comes from giving pleasure to a loved animal, and the sight of the little form trotting ahead of me lent a depth which had been missing before. Round the curve of the path I came to where the tide of heather lapped thickly down the hillside on a little slope facing invitingly into the sun. It was a call I could never resist. I looked at my watch. Oh, I had a few minutes to spare, and there was nothing urgent ahead, just Mr. Dacre's tuberculin test. In a moment I was stretched out on the springy stems, the most wonderful natural mattress in the world. Lying there, eyes half closed against the sun's glare, the heavy heather fragrance around me, I could see the cloud shadows racing across the flanks of the fells, throwing the gullies and crevices into momentary gloom, but trailing a fresh, flaring green in their wake. Those were the days when I was most grateful I was in country practice. The shirt-sleeve days, when the bleak menace of the bald heights melted into friendliness, when I felt at one with all the airy life and growth about me, and was glad that I had become what I never thought I would be, a doctor of farm animals.